outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bavada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is The God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
What's this? A new podcast? On Tuesday morning? Yeah, I know we did it last week, but that was special. That was just an announcement for this Bible class I was starting for kids, and you can still find out more about that if you want. It's now called The Jesus Story. I know we announced it as a scripture story, but we've already changed that because of the focus of what we're talking about with kids, and if you want to explore that with yours, you can join us at the link below. But I'm having so many conversations these days that I would love to share with you, and instead of just keeping them all for Friday, because this pandemic and our response to it is changing situations so dramatically that things I record one day could be even outdated 2 or 3 days later. And that's the nature of the thing that we're in. And so rather than holding a bunch of podcasts that become increasingly irrelevant as time moves on, I thought we'd drop a special one in here. We may do it again because there's some topics and things I'm wanting to explore with people and want to explore with you too. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. Welcome to this special edition of The God Journey. Jeff Andreessen's been on here before. He's a pilot, flies for American Airlines out of Charlotte, North Carolina. This pandemic has put him in some situations that's changed the trajectory of his life. And I think it's a story we're sharing because other people's lives are going to be changed in this storm as well. And rather than just pushing our way through to try and get what we think we need to happen, maybe we need to relax a little bit, listen to where God may be redirecting our lives during this time. And so I had a chance to talk with Jeff over the weekend, and instead of waiting till Friday when I've already got something else going on there, I thought we'd air it with you now. So here's my conversation with Jeff Andreessen. This has kind of been a special last few days for you. Talk about things changing overnight, huh?
It has. Two weeks ago, I was a happy American Airlines captain, and today I'm retired. Early leave of absence that the company offered.
A little bit earlier than you planned to.
About 2 years and 9 months early, yeah. And okay. It looked a lot different than what I had planned.
Oh, wow. So how did that decision come to bear for you guys?
Things really started to heat up a couple of weeks ago, and we were doing some what I consider suicide missions into San Francisco. I'm flying refugees basically into there.
Refugees from where?
Well, just there are passengers, but I'm
you're calling them refugees.
Refugees.
Oh, I thought you were flying.
It felt like we were at war.
Wow.
And so we're flying them in there with supplies and things like that. But real quickly, American saw their load factors dropped to 25%. And so they just started parking airplanes. And so some of our airports, like Tulsa, became a parking lot as we started grounding probably about 1,000 airplanes.
Do you notice the traffic being a lot lighter when you were out flying in your last few runs? Traffic in the air, like you're coming to San Francisco. Are you
a
few airplanes?
Wide open. You can go anywhere you want. You could request any altitude and go where you want. We had the skies to ourselves wherever we went. It was eerie in that sense because every once in a while we'd check in with air traffic control and say, hey, you still there? You know, because he's not talking to anybody. So you don't really know, have you gone out of his range or not? And so it was a little eerie.
Were you flying on 9/11? Did you experience some of that on that day? Or
yeah, on 9/11, I was actually deadheading in a 737 down to Miami. I was going to pick up a 757, fly to Boston, and then the next day go Boston, Los Angeles. And and that was going to be on September 12th. And the obviously September 11th, day before, it all went down. And so I experienced that firsthand. And the way this looks, this could be potentially more dangerous than 9/11 for the health of the airline industry.
Oh, my gosh. Not to mention the health of people.
Yeah. So American Airlines is bleeding red ink, and so they offered an early out. They needed 560 volunteers, and apparently 620 of us actually volunteered. And what that does is it creates some space so they won't have to furlough guys more on the bottom of the list. And it gives you the option to sort of step up and take the leave. And so we sort of went through a little bit of a crisis of faith in a sense of, okay, Lord, is this something that you want to do? Is this for me? And I was in that age group. They wanted 64-year-olds first, then 63-year-olds. And then if they got if they still needed it, they would go to 62.
Which is where you are.
Yeah. So I'm 62 in 3 months, and I would have been the last guy processed. But what was more interesting was just sifting through this with the Lord. I grew up in the cockpit. My first memory was sitting in my dad's lap in a DC-6 crossing the Atlantic Ocean, and he's making pictures out of the clouds. He's showing me how to do that. You see the bunny rabbit, you know? Right. In a sense, I always knew who I was. I was an airline pilot. When you walk into a room and there's a gathering and somebody says, hey, what do you do? And I say airline pilot, they know exactly who you are and what you do. And it just took a lot of the mystery out of that. So knowing exactly who I am was a kind of a great way to go through life. And when this decision came, it came at a time where flying really had become in the last years for me more about making as much money for doing as little work as possible.
Isn't that most people's vocational aspiration?
it certainly is. And American Airlines was fairly inefficient, and I lived in a hub. And when trips broke up, they'd give me a call and they'd say, hey, do you want to go to Raleigh and deadhead back? You know, that's about 30, 35 minutes of flying. And I'm like, yeah, and they have to pay you a full day's pay. And I did really well at that. I got 3 years to go to retirement. So it's like, this is time to make hay. And I'm really just playing the system, making as much money as I can. But the glory really had parted from the job for the most part. I was just really kind of doing it for the money. So I was in a meeting up in Charlottesville, Virginia with all my friends. And Robert King was in that meeting. And I was confessing to him. I was saying, you know, I'm doing as well as I've ever done. And I feel bone dry. And Robert King turns to me. You know Robert.
I do.
And he looks at me and he goes, you stay alive. And that hit me. You know how your friend could talk to you, but you know it's the Lord. Hmm. And so I went home with that information. And it's not like I can even really make that happen. You know, Wayne, I don't know about you, but I find that even at 62 years old, the Lord has to come and rescue me still. I don't even know what to do, how to do that. I'm going to go home and still look for the best trips and get into a work productivity thing. And then this event happens. And I was like, Lord, is this you coming for me? Are you throwing me a life raft here? So with much fear and trepidation, I hit the send button on the bid, thinking they would never really get down to me. But when I hit it, all this emotion came up in me. But I didn't know where it came from, because I think our subconscious sometimes knows more than our conscious. And I hit the send button. The real courage was trying not to rescind the bid, because I had a few days for it. It sat there, and I watched the time go. And then the next day, sure enough, my name was on the list. I think it was 2 days later, they accepted it. I found out in the morning, and I had my last flight that afternoon. And I flew from Charlotte to Boston, and it just turned out to be an epic flight in the sense of how beautiful it was, clear and a million miles visibility. And I flew up over New Jersey where I grew up, and I flew a Piper Cub up there. And I would take my friends out over Perth Amboy, and I would do a loop over the ocean. No parachutes or anything like that. This is a 1947 fabric airplane.
So you didn't do that with the American Airlines plane, though, right?
No. This is a Piper Cub. And then I would fly 50 feet over Staten Island, jump up over the Verrazano Bridge, circle around the Statue of Liberty, and I'd go up the New York Harbor at 700 feet, where the Twin Towers were actually higher than you. And I just went over all of that stuff. And Wayne, I was fathered so well in those moments as me and the Lord had one more time at altitude. It's where I really found him sitting up there, in a place where I could talk to him. And, so I got to Boston, and my last flight out of Boston, was going to be to Philadelphia, and it was going to be flight number 1776, which has a little significance there.
'Cause you're a history man.
Me and Wayne actually met at Monticello, where I was a historical guide at Thomas Jefferson's house. And so that date had some meaning. And we flew. So I told the co-pilot when I got on the airplane, I said, listen, I'm going to keep flying until I make a nice landing. Once I make a nice landing, I'm going to give the rest of them to you. And so when I went into Boston, we had a light airplane with very gusty winds, gusting to 27 knots. Not a good situation for a great landing. But somehow I managed a nice landing. And then I just turned to the co-pilot and I says, okay, the rest are yours. I'm done. I'm going to leave it at that. And so on the last flight, I let him fly me from Boston to Philadelphia. And we touched down and I watched basically 25 people get off my airplane with surgical masks. And I shut down a dark airplane and I walked out to an empty terminal where there was nobody.
And then you had to get on another plane and fly home to Charlotte, yeah?
I went to the hotel. They overnighted me, and okay. I deadheaded home the next day. And that was it.
Well, this was on Facebook the next day. It says, last flight for American, flight 1776, Boston to Philadelphia. How fitting. 37 years, 25,000 hours, and nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's my claim to fame.
That sums up your career, huh?
Yeah, when you fly in the New York, Washington, Boston, that's some of the most complex airspace up there. You put a little weather mix in there, and you're busy. And the fact that not only did nobody get hurt, I never got a violation. That's unbelievable.
Wow, that's amazing.
But I'll tell you, flying airplanes when you're 62, it really changes. You know, just the other day, I was going from Dallas to Tampa, and there was a line of weather that went from Cancun all the way up to Canada, and there were no breaks in it. And it's laying down tornadoes and hail. And there was a hole about the size of my house, 50 miles south of Tampa. And I'm thinking to myself, that's where I'm going. I'm going to take this hole. And so dispatch miracles actually followed me that way. And as soon as we take off, air traffic control gives us a reroute. And they're going to take us right through the weather. And I'm sitting there and, I'm thinking, no way. I'm not going to do this. And so we got onto the next center, Houston Center, and we said, hey, we'd like to get our Gulf route back. We need that. And so it was a female air traffic controller who then says, well, the Q routes are closed over the Gulf. And so I got on the radio. I said, well, I think it's time to open them up. And Wayne, we took that hole. They did. They opened them up for us. We took that hole sideways with all the lightning going on. And landed in Tampa, unbeknownst to me, a tornado is on the north side of the city. And so when everybody got off that airplane, they knew what we did. And so everybody high-fived us. But I'm thinking at 62, I'm getting just a little too old for this. I'm reaching my expiration date. And so when this opportunity came along, I really thought long and hard of it. But to give it all away, to give it back to God, it was a real death experience. It was going to be another one of those leap of faith. And it was like throwing my uniform down at the foot of the cross.
Yeah. You texted me right when you made that decision, right? Or shortly after you sent in the request?
Before I had known what the bid was, but when I had the overwhelming feeling of what was going on.
And what was unique about that is I was here and I just, during this time, I'm thinking about people I know who are affected by what's going on in the world with the coronavirus and been praying. I was praying for you. I was praying for you and Dana. And when I got done praying, just because I knew you're out there flying, I knew you're being exposed to stuff and just prayed for your protection, whatever. And then when I get done praying, I look at my computer and your name pops up as a text from. And I went, what? I would just, because I made a note. I'm going to call Jeff today and just see how he's doing. And so I think I called you then. Or did I text you back? Or I called you. I think I called you.
You called me right away.
Yeah. And I just said, hey, I need you to know, man, I was praying for you at that exact moment you guys were making that decision, which I just love how God does little weird things like that. I think that's fun. I know you guys made it over more than just that few seconds I was praying for you, but you guys been over the last few hours, 24, 30, whatever, you guys were talking about it and praying. But I woke up this morning and it was very emotional to lay this down. I mean, this was, like you said, a big part of your identity. You already had to give it up once for an 8-year span. I mean, you had some medical issues that took you out of flying for 8 years, and then you were able to get back in. And I remember how excited you were to get back in the pilot in command and fly that puppy. And being a former pilot myself, I get that. I get how much I would love to. I got to fly in a plane here a few months ago, a small plane. I got to fly it some with the pilot that took me for a ride. And man, I love that so much. I tell Sarah all the time, one of my big regrets in life is I didn't do more with aviation. And that's a small regret because I've done a lot of other things I never expected to do. But aviation, beyond my being 22, 23, just never fit into my life. But for you, what's your life? You give it up for 8 years. You have to. You get it back. And how long have you been flying since that?
So I've been back for 7 years.
7 years. And now your daughter's a flight attendant with American. Right. So you guys right. have shared that together. And so kind of all that goes away, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the best parts of flying is just I was able to come home. And to Dana, I was her Peter Pan. I was her guy that could fly her anywhere. If she was happy, to me, I love that aspect of my job. You know, she would make sure I had everything I needed for the trip and take care of me when I came home. And
yeah, Peter Pan's not necessarily the image I would use of that, Jeff, but you can
go ahead.
Well,
in the sense that, you know, I would take her to, I would fly her off to places. You know, I could take her to Barbados with me. I could right. take her on all these trips. And I really love that. One of my heroes is Gail Irwin. And I know you know who he is. And he wrote the book, The Jesus Style. And he talked about a reverse leadership in the sense that if I'm a true leader and I'm with a group of people, you're not there to serve my needs. I'm rather there to serve your needs. And one of the things I loved as being a captain was taking that authority that I had, and I would come into my crew and I would serve them. And often the first thing I would do to the co-pilot was meet him and go, I got to walk around. I'm doing the first one. When I'd go back with the flight attendants, I had chocolate. And I had the good chocolate, not just the, you know, the Hershey's. And I would hand it out liberally. And I would just listen to them. And I would talk with them. And I would affirm them. And every trip I got off of with I had a new friend in the co-pilot I flew with for 3 days. And it was just a great time to do that reverse servant leadership. And sometimes just small acts of kindness can really keep the kingdom of darkness at bay. And so I loved practicing my faith in my job.
That's neat. But what was this decision like for you going back? I mean, it wasn't just, you talk about a suicide flight. You've got a friend that's saying to you, you know, to keep yourself alive, whatever. You wouldn't say it was a fear-based decision, or would you?
Flying is going to be very difficult right now because when I flew the last few missions, the first 15 minutes, I'm swabbing the deck down. I'm hitting every switch and button with an alcohol swab that I can find. And I have found you cannot, it's impossible to hit every place that you're going to touch in that cockpit. I'll give you, for instance, 15 minutes of everything cleaning, we take off and boom, there's a sun right in my eyes. I grab the sun visor and bring it down. And I'm like, oh my, I didn't sterilize the sun visor. And it really does add a lot because it's a bit distracting right. where you need to be fully engaged in the job at hand. And so the only fear factor is that you're an essential worker who's completely exposed. There's really no protection for you at all. And this virus has caught the airlines with their pants down. And I don't blame them. They just weren't ready for it.
It's amazing how much, and I think this maybe goes to some of the American psyche, or actually worldwide, we've become so engaged with indulgence in the present, mm-hmm. that we don't really factor in what could happen. You know, we've been warned about these yeah. pandemics in an increasingly mobile society forever. And mm-hmm. we've been fortunate with some of the ones that have kind of broken out, SARS and MERS, and we were able to put those down fairly quickly. This is the first thing that has affected the whole of world culture probably since World War II. This is the first yeah. event that has caused everybody to have to stop and take notice and make sacrifice. And even we get down to just how people live and how much the government just votes out $2 trillion of money because nobody has any savings. Nobody has anything to get through a season like this. Everybody's lived on the edge of their financial margin, and not just on the edge, we've lived beyond yeah. our means. Yeah, I mean, you can talk about as a country how much yeah. we have wasted money and spending into debt, and now we're jumping all of that to go into huge debt coming down the road, and maybe there's no choice now.
I saw in Men's Journal a picture that stopped me. And it was, I think, Luke Skywalker in the latest Star Wars. And he had a shirt on with the VW bus. And across the top of the shirt was, live beneath your means.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but that picture stopped me. And I contemplated that for months after having seen that picture. And I knew there was something about it that I loved, but I didn't know why I loved it so much. And so when American offered the package, it's a 50% reduction in pay. pretty much right away. And I realized that we're probably living on 40% of what I'm making. Not that I'm a good, great money manager or anything like that. It was simply that I knew retirement's coming and we didn't want to live within our means because that wasn't going to be able to continue. So we were able to take the 50% pay cut and look at the numbers and go, you know what, we could get by. We're not going to be able to do what we always wanted to do. Some of our dreams might go away, but we can get by. That's going to be one of the lessons we learn here in our country, Wayne, is this idea of going, you know what, I think it's time to live within our means.
Yeah, as a country and as individuals. I know, even the whole idea of living beneath our means. My parents were products of the Great Depression. My dad was born in 1925, I believe, something like that. So there were children during the Depression, but they grew up with that ethic from their parents in World War II and, you know, always have something in reserve. Don't live to the edge of your financial reality. I grew up that way. Sarah and I have been the same way. You know, always have a backlog, always have stuff there so that you can absorb. And we watched my dad was a raisin farmer. Twice in our lifetime, his crop got rained out, where the crop is on the ground drying and rain comes through the valley, which is very rare in September, but it came through and destroyed his crop. Now, my dad got one check a year of income. Wow. And that's when he hauls those raisins into the warehouse. And for 2 years, and they weren't 2 years in a row, fortunately, but they were 2 years you didn't get it. And when he didn't get it, he had to survive the next year. Combination of savings, combination of borrowing money that you had to then pay back the following year with the crop. That I watched the second time the crop was getting rained out. I remember standing with my dad on the patio, and we had one of those aluminum, one of those tin patio roofs, and the rain was pelting down. It was loud, and Dad was looking out, and this was the second storm on this crop. So I knew it, and it was like 2 inches of rain. So this crop's done. He's going to disc it into the field. He's never going to take it anywhere. It'll be rotten. And I looked at him. I said, Dad, what are we going to do? And I remember him looking at me saying, and he didn't look at me, actually. He just kept looking out over the vineyard. And he said, you know what, Wayne? God has always taken care of us.
Oh, wow.
And I suspect this won't change that. And yeah. He'll have a way. And I could see a tear in his eye. I mean, for me, it wasn't just a flippant, you know, religious response. It was, we're going to learn this part now, you know?
Mm.
And I think that we've been challenged by a culture that lives beyond its means, always carrying heavy debt. And I don't mean just the government. It has been doing it, but also people do it. And it's not like we're doing it of necessity. We're doing it to buy the latest iPhone or go on the latest cruise or do, you know, we're doing extravagant things. You're buying a $5 cup of coffee twice a day.
Right.
That's how we're living. And I'm like you. I hope this season, it's going to have to, because on the backside of this $2 billion our government is giving away, that's got to be paid back. That's whether it's taxpayers for the next 50 years. And maybe we do have a restaging of what we think is real financially. And we're going to have to tighten the belt straps because we can't keep living the way we've been living. And then you're not ready for a crisis. And my dad always taught us, always live like a crisis is coming. Have stuff prepared and ready and don't get caught unaware.
My dad was born in 1925 also. So the Depression and then World War II. And so he always lived within his means. And I'm the one that didn't quite live that way. But I was so glad to see how my dad handled that growing up. But, you know, one of the things that I would say, and I never read this anywhere, this is just Jeff Andreessen, but I'm very storm oriented when storms come into our lives. And I'm storm oriented because when I have to go to work, the first thing I'm checking is the weather maps. You know, where's going to be the challenge stage of this flight? And it's going to be somewhere. And one of the things I would say, there's three ways to handle a storm. And I'm talking about the storms that come into our life as a metaphor. And the first one is when the storm comes, you fight it with everything you have. And then a great example of that would be cancer. And then the second way to fight a storm is when you basically have to hammer down the tent pegs and you have to get in your tent and ride it out and hope it doesn't carry you away. And when it's over, you get up and make sure that, you know, maybe your refrigerator moved or your air conditioner is not in the same place, but you're basically in the same place and now you have to rebuild. And then the third way to take a storm is to let it carry you away. And let it just take you into a new reality, and that you're not meant to fight it. It's just going to take you and you're going to wake up and Toto, you are not in Kansas anymore. That's what happened to me in this storm. I'm going to wake up. I woke up this morning in disbelief. I can't believe that I don't have a schedule anymore. I can't believe I don't have a position, a title. I'm home. It's a great thing, but it's so fearful.
How are you coping with that? Back up. You woke up this morning and it's different. And everybody, everybody woke up this morning and their life is different for the most part.
Different. Yeah.
Even if you're employed as a health worker, you're going to the hospital today without necessarily all the equipment you need. And you're on the front lines of this thing. So everybody wakes up today. Their life is different. Now you say that you experience fear in that today.
Yeah. I think it is a pretty fearful thing. I think there's seasons with the Lord that are refreshing, that bring a lot of healing and comfort. And then I think there's times where his call is significant and there's loss. And I love what he said to Peter one day. He said to Peter that, hey, Peter, when you were young, you used to walk where you wanted to walk. But when you're older, another stronger than you will come and guide you and lead you to where you don't want to go. And I think there's these fearful times of when that happens, is this a good thing or a bad thing? This stronger one right now. When Abraham got that call to leave everything he knew in Ur of Chaldees and to walk into the unknown with God, I think that was actually a very, very fearful thing because he was being completely taken out of his comfort zone to follow this wild God, and he was going to go on the adventure of his life.
So do you mean fearful, like you're scared or more apprehensive into the unknown?
I'm one of these guys that are the loyal soldier. And so I had my last trip. I could have called in sick for it, but I wouldn't call in sick to go to San Francisco because if I didn't go, somebody else was going to have to go for me. And so I'm that kind of guy that always does the right thing. And so when I woke up this morning, it's like, oh my God, did I make the right decision? Am I going to be able to provide for my wife and my kids? What about her dreams and aspirations? So I woke up this morning in complete shock that I'm basically retired. And did I make the right decision? Because I could have taken a 6-month leave and then come back. And that would have been good enough to write the book that I always wanted to write. And so I certainly have no excuses now not to write the book.
Now you've got lots of time and hopefully lots of energy with it. And you can't do much else anyway. You can't get out of your home much. Is North Carolina as locked down as California is, or you guys have some freedom to still move around?
We are shelter in place, but essential businesses are open. But get this, the boat club is still going to be open. They're going to let the boat club open so that we can go over there. They'll hose everything down and then we can get out on the boat. Thank God. You know, one of the things that to me was really
it's interesting what they've decided was essential businesses.
My daughter will tell you that as a flight attendant, they went from glorified sky waitresses to essential workers in no time at all, you know?
Yes.
And she got the pickup line the other day from somebody. If COVID-19 doesn't take you out, can I take you out? So there's that saying by Annie Lamott that I really hold on to, and she says, you know, the opposite of faith is not rebellion, but rather the opposite of faith is predictability. And I think we really get into these places in our life where we want it to be fairly predictable. And somehow we think that's a great organized life. And I've found myself completely out of unpredictability. And oddly enough, when we were flying to San Francisco and we were contemplating three options, mild, moderate, or go be with Jesus, you know, because we're just exposed here. We're not only going to get it, but we'll, you know, how are we going to get it? But in the midst of that unpredictability, we were living life to its top. Every moment it seemed like God was talking. Every moment I was in appreciation for what I had. Every moment I was taking pictures going, I don't even know how long this is going to last. Am I going to go? We were living life to its top.
Wow. Now the unexpected transition now in your life, which is that part of that being carried, let the storm carry you away?
Yeah. I
mean, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do that as a pilot, right? You wouldn't let the storm carry you away. Right.
Right. That,
no, this analogy. So times you got to fight it.
But I think there are certain storms that come into our life and they sweep us away. And we can't hold on to what we used to have. And we wake up into a new reality. I always live by that idea that, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen in life would be the killing of God. And yet that killing of God wound up to be the salvation of the world. And so Jesus changed everything from that moment on for me, in the sense of the very worst things in life have the possibility of becoming the very best things in life. I've experienced that before. And while I'm in a death experience of loss and maybe disorientation, I trust that he'll come through for me. I trust that my best days are to come. He's done it before, and I'm looking for him to do that again.
I think there's got to be a certain level of grief, too, of just the grief of losing that vocation, getting up, doing what you do, and losing it in a particularly not fun time to lose it, because it was better 2 months ago than it is today.
Right. If I were to counsel anybody, I would say never make a major decision in a crisis while you're in a crisis. And then I had to do exactly that.
But you guys, I like where you step back and you really listen to what God's putting on your heart. And if you felt like God was saying, hey, hang in there. Aviation's going to be important. We're going to need to get some health people around the country in various ways. And, you know, this is a risk you can take and I'll be with you. You would have done that too. But there was a laying back into God saying, does this carry me away? And I think sometimes when we're so pre-programmed our lives, we so live by the illusion that we can be in control.
Yeah.
I think what this season does for many of us, if we're going to reconfigure our lives and reconfigure our thoughts, it destroys that illusion of control. I'm not in control. I can have all my best laid plans and something like, you know, somebody eating some weird animal in China can... Yeah. Wrap around the whole world with a new disease that we're not ready to handle, can't cope with. Thousands of people are going to die. I would like to say, you know, I've seen that, you know, your best days are ahead of you. And I like to believe that, but I also, the reality is this is going to kill some people.
Right.
This is going to bankrupt some businesses, and they're not going to all be, you know, heathens who lose their business or lose their lives. The rain falls on the just and the unjust. And I think at times like this, it's not so much our hope in the future that gives us the confidence to move on. To me, it's that God is with me, and this whole world, my life in this world is not all God made me for. This is just a piece of what my life will be. And whether it's cut short here and I go on elsewhere, I mean, I think we need a gospel that's strong enough to hold people in the storm when we don't know the outcome. When the outcome could be perilous on our behalf, and we're still saying, you know, it's God in whom I put my trust. I've been reading Habakkuk the last couple of days, the old prophet Habakkuk. And in the very beginning of it, he talks about Nineveh having this mentality that my strength is my God. What I can do, what I can provide, what I can reason out, my strength is my God. And God's condemning that in the Ninevites. And then at the end, Habakkuk talks about, but the Lord God is my strength. So my strength is not in how well I can protect myself from the virus, though I think we ought to do everything we're being asked to do and be as prudent about staying home and staying out of harm's way as we're being asked to do for the sake of others. But the contrast between my strength is my God or my God is my strength, just that little flip of the word in the sentence is quite the change, which means it doesn't matter what tomorrow holds. It doesn't matter if my best days aren't ahead of me, that it's sufficient today is the grace God has for me, and I can be triumphantly in that. And then if even the worst happens and my life is cut short in this world, then the best has happened in the next. And I always think death is bad for we who are left, for the person who goes, my gosh.
Yes.
Finally, what they were created for becomes their reality. And I hope when we settle out this uncertain time that we're in, we have better means to live on than the false hopes that we always used to live on, that everything's going to be good, that my retirement nest egg is going to be enough, that I've done this right, that right, instead of, no, we need God as much today as we ever did. It just, we have less illusions about that.
Yeah. I do. I think it's going to clear out a lot of things. Things are going to become crystal clear in people's lives about what's really important. I sat down with my family and I said, listen, it's better if I stay with you, but it's better for me to go be with Jesus. And then after Angie did that write-up for me in Facebook about what she thinks of her dad, I'm like, I could go to heaven right now. That's it, man. If I packed it in and went to be with Jesus, I'm good with that.
Yeah, I like what you said about coming into New York and being in that familiar airspace and just the closeness that you feel to God at that kind of moment, or, you know, being in the skies, it's always easier for you to lean in there. I think we all need to find those places right now in our life where it's easy, not as a religious works kind of thing, but where is it easy for you to lean into God? And if it's 40,000 feet over New York City, that may be hard to come up with today.
Yeah. But that's where it happens for me. Yeah.
I do love people saying to me that there's places they go. There'd be places in their backyard or a chair in their front room or a walk down a certain pathway where it just seems the air's a little thinner there. That God's a little, the old talk about thin places, where God and heaven and the kingdom seem to be closer. And I know it's not the geographical thing. I know it's the place in our heart, but some places make it easier for us to open to that. And some of us may need to find those or create those right now, because for some of that was church on Sunday morning. Man, I go there, and now you're not going there anymore. And you might see the service online, but it's not the same thing. And now it gives me a different way, place to say, Jesus, teach me where it is right now that I can draw near to you. And it, not just geography, but the place in the heart that allows me to access. Because that's what we need in times like this. We don't need the news that's just gone 24 hours a day, horrible virus news. Get a little of that, enough to be informed, but really get informed inside your own walk with God. Get inside that place where you can draw near to him.
Wayne, this is exactly what it was like to try to make this decision to pull the plug. And it was, I had to take all the news and the newsreels and all the noise down here on earth, and I had to get my coordinates from above. I had to look to God and go, okay, Father, what are, in spite of everything I see and everything I know and all my plans and all my hopes, what is it that you want to do? You know? And the thing I heard is, you cannot make a mistake. And when he said that to me, I took all the pressure off me.
Yeah.
It took all the pressure off, you know, am I going to make the wrong decision? I love that.
And sometimes there isn't a wrong decision. I think that kind of that false religious overlay of, well, if God wants me to keep flying and I've decided to take this leave, I have ruined the whole will of God for my life, which isn't true. It's God saying, I think in times like that, you can't make a mistake, which means either option is going to be fine. I'll walk you down either road you want to go.
Yeah. I think one day we're going to have to surrender everything. You know, we're not going to be able to hold on to this life. We're going to go be with Jesus. And I think there's times in this walk, in this life, we could start doing that now. We could just start letting him have it and go, okay, I'm willing to lose this. If I can lose that and exchange it for more of you, it's worth it.
And what I always find in surrender, the more I surrender to God in the moment, whether it's grief I'm feeling for someone I've lost, whether it's pain I'm feeling or uncertainty about my job or income or life or whatever, the more you just come to that place of surrender, the more rich his presence becomes. Not as a reward, it's just I'm out of the way more. It's that, you know, blessed are you when you're at the end of your rope, because then there's less of you and more of me, that the first beatitude. It's a great place to live.
And just comes back to that living within your means. What do you really need to get by? And would I have more of Jesus by living that way? And it seemed like it, Wayne. When I made that decision, I had a peace about the things that, and all of a sudden God started talking, and that was good. In a way I hadn't heard in a long time.
Yeah.
And if it's all worth it to give it up, to hear that and to be that close to the Father.
Bible study I did this week for the kids. I started a new thing called the Jesus Story, kind of walking kids through the Bible, doing it with my own grandkids and then letting other people watch it with us. One, it's a risk for me to do something entirely new, man. I don't know that I'm a great kid talker in terms of helping them understand the things I want them to understand about Scripture. But the other thing was that it seems like as a child, we're closer, more sensitive to the nudgings of God. And then the more we get covered up by the world's stuff and agenda, the more distant that voice can become. And it's not just an age thing. The more we need to lean into that other space where he makes himself known. So I appreciate you coming on and sharing a bit of your story, a pretty transitional moment for you guys.
Very much so. You know, I think I'm not a signs and wonders guy, but my flight number 1776, when I began to think about that, that was the year things began for our country. It wasn't the end. It was the beginning of something. And while I'm in the death experience of this, I don't really know what that looks like, but I'm just kind of holding on to that there's going to be a resurrection here.
I love when God plays with us like that, because I think the numbers, like just a flight number. Someone sent me a long email from Germany the other day, and they March 24th last year, God done some amazing things in their life. They looked at an old baptism certificate just the other day and saw they were baptized in 1985 on March 24th.
Oh.
And just, you know, that's just playful. Yeah. That's just God saying, yeah, I'm here.
Yep.
I didn't wait 40 years to another March 24th, but I'm just playing with you a little bit just to say, I'm here. I'm doing what I need to do, and I'll take care of you through this too.
Hey, Wayne, I love you. I want to thank you for being there for me when I needed an elder to run a few things over you, you know. So thank you for being there, bro.
You wanted to run over me? Wow, that sounds painful.
Well, some ideas that I wanted to run past you, I'll say. Let's put it that way.
No problem.
So thank you for listening and being there.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.